breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on X at John Stolness. Your Philadelphia Phillies here in 2024 are National League East champs. They clinched the National League East thanks to a 6-2 win over the Cubs on Monday night and finish atop the division standings for the first time since 2011. On the podcast here, we're going to kind of recap the game on Monday night and really just kind of take a look back at what is a special season here in 2024. This Phillies team has just continued to get better and better as these seasons have gone along, and this has been a magical ride. There have been moments of frustration at times, certainly, but certainly so many moments of joy and fun and excitement with this 2024 Phillies team, and Monday night's win over the Cubs was no exception. So we're going to also kind of take a look at the last week of the season here, what the Phillies need to do to finish the job and try and earn a bye past the wild card round. They've almost got that locked up. And then to finish with the best record, not only in the National League, but in all of baseball. As there is it is a close race between the Phillies, Yankees, and Dodgers as we are putting the show to bed here on Monday night. So even after losing 3 out of 4 to the Mets over the weekend, you know, there was never really any question that this was going to happen. What we saw at Citizens Bank Park, there was really never any doubt that the Phillies were going to clinch the National League East. We thought it would happen in New York over the weekend. There was a chance it could happen in Milwaukee against the Brewers. It didn't. No big deal. The Phillies lose 3 out of 4 to the Mets. That was certainly disappointing, especially the game on Sunday Night Baseball. It was an electric scene there in New York, by the way. I'll tell you what, for Phillies fans who pride themselves on being one of the more electric venues in postseason baseball, that crowd, I think, rivaled a Citizens Bank Park crowd. That was some great stuff there by Mets fans, and I am loath to credit Mets fans with anything. But here you've got your Philadelphia Phillies finishing atop the National League East. They essentially had control of the division since the beginning of May. That is when they moved into first place on May 3rd. After beating the Giants to move to 22-11 on the season. And let's just kind of take a look back at the season and how things kind of progressed to get to the point where we are here on Monday night. The lead never, even despite some of the struggles that they had during the course of the summer, the lead never fell below 5 games. They got off to a fast start. We had talked about it in the beginning of the season. The Phillies needed to get off to a fast start. The schedule was in their favor. They had a lot of home games front-loaded on the schedule, and they had a slew of easier opponents. We all were saying that the way the Phillies got to the postseason in 2022 and 2023, it's not sustainable to scratch and claw your way to October every single year. There have to be times where you have to take advantage of the soft underbelly of your schedule, get out to a fast start, and then as you deal with the slog of the summer and the more challenging opponents come down the pike and you start playing more games on the road, you know that the record is going to suffer a little bit. But that's why you want to do a little bit more early in the season, and that is exactly what the Phillies did. After a lackluster 8-8 start, they rattled off a 7-game winning streak, and then after a 4-1 win over the Red Sox in Boston on June 11th, they were 10 games up in the standings with a 46-20 record, and they were 10 games up for 2 days during the course of the season, and then the lead dipped back under 10 games. But they had gone 38-12, a .760 winning percentage for the better part of 2 months in May and June. At one time, you guys probably remember this, we were talking about this being the best Phillies team of all time, that they were going to break the 102 win record of 2011. I know that I wrote a piece, it was either for The Good Fight or for Billy Penn, you know, comparing where the Phillies were to the all-time wins record by that Mariners team. I think it was 1998. and some of the other 107-win teams, 108-win teams, right? I mean, we were talking about this Phillies team in that conversation and really just more asking the question, could they do it? Are we looking at one of the greatest teams in baseball history? As it turns out, the Phillies were not that. They certainly did have their midseason swoon, but not before Bryce Harper won back-to-back Player of the Month honors in May and June. Not before Ranger Suarez raced out to that ridiculous start, winning Pitcher of the Month in April, and he could have won it in May. Emerged as a Cy Young candidate before the injuries, his back spasms knocked him out of action and really kind of zapped some of his effectiveness here late in the season. But Christopher Sanchez emerged as a dominant force in the rotation, winning Pitcher of the Month in June. Alec Bohm emerged as an all-star starter at third base. The Phillies had 8 players selected to the National League All-Star team. 6 of them end up playing in the game, including Bryce Harper starting at first, Trey Turner starting at shortstop, and Alec Bohm starting at third base. 2 middle relievers, Matt Strom and Jeff Hoffman, both get into the game, and Christopher Sanchez also gets into the game. Zach Wheeler dealing with a little bit of an injury issue at midseason. Ranger Suarez, of course, dealing with the back issues. Selected to the All-Star game, but don't play. But the Phillies owned the All-Star game, if you'll remember. There was the trip to London, the 2-game series against the Mets. Bryce Harper is sliding on his knees. It was a magical ride during the course of the summer. And yes, the month of July was a rough patch, 10-14 in the month of July. At one point during the summer, they went 8-18. It was a pretty tough time to watch the team. But they have gone 28-21 in August and September. There's 5 games left as we are recording this. And when you race out to a 62-34 record in the first half, you can go 31-30 in the second half and still coast to a division title. They won 36 of their first 50 games. That is the best mark in franchise history through 50 games. Through 100 games, they were 63-37. The Phillies did everything they needed to do to put the division into overdrive. Now, certainly one of the reasons the Phillies got to the point that they are, and one of the reasons that the Atlanta Braves had their run of 6 straight division titles end here in 2024, was the cascade of injuries, the cascade of crippling injuries to MVP and Cy Young caliber star players. Spencer Strider goes on the injured list early in the season. That's bad enough. And then you lose Ronald Acuna, who was off to a really slow start. The offense, Atlanta's offense, never really got going this year. And as you know, as listeners of this podcast know, I was one of the people saying, I think we've got to temper our expectations about the Braves' offense. There's no way they were going to duplicate what they did in 2023. That was an offense that was due for a regression big time. The whole team slugged over 500. It wasn't going to happen again, and it didn't. And then Austin Riley is lost at midseason for the rest of the year. Ozzie Albies missed a substantial amount of time. Really, the healthiest and most productive player on the Braves was the guy that we all thought would be on the injured list a number of different times. That was Chris Sale, who's probably going to win National League Cy Young Award. But here for the Phillies, you had Zach Wheeler turn in another Cy Young caliber season. Aaron Nola, I think, had his best overall season since the season that he almost won the Cy Young Award back in 2018. He had some blow-up moments, and he had a couple of rough starts here in the month of September. But overall, Aaron Nola was consistent and solid and dependable during the course of the year, as we saw on Monday night as well. And Christopher Sanchez emerged as a true top-of-the-rotation starter, not just a number 4 guy that you feel decent about penciling in against another team's number 4. No, he's a guy you could put at the top of the rotation. And we're going to have conversations here over the next week as to whether or not Christopher Sanchez or Aaron Nola should be a Game 2 starter, given Sanchez pitches so much better at Citizens Bank Park that you might want him to start Game 2 at home and then have Game 3 for Aaron Nola. But then, of course, you know, that affects the other series and everything else. So there's also the experience factor. But we're going to get into all that stuff here over the next few days as well. And let's also just remember, and the Mets, their hot streak started a bit too late to catch the Phillies in the division. If they'd started playing like this a month earlier, who knows how this division may have turned out. But that's why the season is 6 months long and not 7 months long. So the Braves, of course, suffer a cascade of injuries. The offense certainly took a step back. They're still a potential playoff team as we record this, although it certainly does look as though the Mets are going to overtake them. The Mets and Braves play a huge three-game series in Atlanta this week. The Mets enter with a two-game lead. If the Mets win the series, they clinch a playoff spot and knock Atlanta out of the playoffs. So Atlanta really has to do damage against the Mets, and I just don't see it happening. I think the Mets are going to win that series and knock Atlanta out of the postseason. And let's also just remember that for all the complaining that we do about Rob Thompson and his game management, his roster decisions, some of the times when it doesn't look like there is a real sense of urgency. And I think that is one of the reasons why the team struggled a little bit here in the summer, was that the Phillies got such a big lead. They felt so comfortable that they took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit by resting guys at certain times. But at the end of the day, here we are on September 23rd with five games left in the season, and the Phillies have wrapped up the National League East and are still fighting, still have a realistic chance, I think they have the best odds of finishing with the best record in the National League and in all of baseball. So that is your 2024 season in a nutshell. And as we look back on this 6-2 win against the Cubs on Monday night, it's pretty clear that the Chicago Cubs are ready to be done with the 2024 season. They got into the wild card mix a little bit a few weeks ago, but then, just like they did last year, tailed off badly at the end. Apparently, Craig Counsell does not solve all problems. It turns out Milwaukee's success was maybe more due to the players and not the overrated manager, as Chicago Cubs fans are learning right now. The Phillies got things rolling on Monday night in the way that they often do, with a big home run. JT Realmuto with a two-run homer in the second inning that allowed everybody to exhale a little bit. And then Kyle Schwarber followed it up with a bomb in the third inning to give the Phillies a 3-0 lead. And Kyle Schwarber he continues to put up numbers that are putting him amongst some of the greats in franchise history. His solo home run was his 100th RBI of the season, to go with 107 runs scored and 102 walks. He is the first Phillies player to have back-to-back 100 RBI seasons since Ryan Howard had six in a row from 2006 to 2011. He was already the first Phillies player to have three straight 100 run seasons since Chase Utley in 2006 to 2009, and the first with back-to-back seasons of 100 walks since Pat Burrell in 2007 and 2008. He is now one of three Phillies to be a two-time member of their 100-100-100 club. That's RBIs, runs, and walks, with Mike Schmidt, who did it five times, and Bobby Abreu, who did it three times. Jim Thome, Dolph Camilli, and Ryan Howard did it one time each. And if Kyle Schwarber gets to 40 home runs, he has 37, so he has five games to hit three more, he will join Mike Schmidt as Phillies multiple players with as Phillies players with multiple 40-100-100-100 seasons. Schwarber is the third Phillies player since 1920. And that's when RBIs became an official stat, with 100 runs, 100 RBIs, and 100 walks in back-to-back seasons, joining Bobby Abreu and Mike Schmidt. And he is the last Major League player to do it since Jose Bautista from 2014 to 2015. Kyle Schwarber had his best season in a Phillies uniform by far here in 2024. The Phillies offense then went and tacked on three more runs as the game went along. Aaron Nola, yet another clinching performance. This guy just does it most of the time in these clinching scenarios. It's one of the reasons Game 6 of the NLCS last year felt so weird, and it was so odd with him pitching so poorly, because normally in a clinching situation, Aaron Nola is at his best. Six innings, seven hits allowed, just two earned runs, seven strikeouts, and two walks. Can we please bury the September Nola narrative now? I know he had two bad starts in the month of September, but guess what? He has bad starts in every month. He's followed it up with two great starts here in the month of September, and he was good in September of last year as well. I think we can officially bury the September Nola narrative now. He is a good pitcher. He is infuriating. There's no doubt about the fact he's infuriating. We all know that. But he is a really, really good pitcher. Since 2022, Aaron Nola has started 7 games in which the Phillies could either A, clinch a postseason berth, B, clinch a postseason series, or clinch a division title. He has a 1.62 ERA, 8 earned runs allowed in 44 and a third innings pitched, with 46 strikeouts and just 7 walks in those 7 games. Aaron Nola did it again for the Phillies in a spot where they could clinch something. Again, the only game I can remember where he didn't was game six of the NLCS last year. Every other start in a clinching situation, he comes through. He just needs to go into every game thinking they're going to clinch something. And maybe they all just need to celebrate something after the fact. Phillies bullpen once again shut the door. Matt Strom came in relief, allowed an inherited runner to score, but kept the game from getting out of hand. And then you had Jeff Hoffman doing his electric thing, and Carlos Estevez finishing things off in the 9th inning. So as the Phillies are celebrating this National League East performance with all of the locker room shenanigans that you're used to, the quest now over the final week of the season is, of course, for home field advantage and a first-round bye in the playoffs. I really do believe this is important. Over the last 2 postseasons, the Phillies are 12-4 at home. And yes, I know they lost games 6 and 7 of the 23 NLCS, and I know they lost games 4 and 5 of the 22 World Series. They're not unbeatable at home, but they are really hard to beat at home. And there's no doubt the Phillies would rather take their chances in Philadelphia in a playoff game as opposed to playing a playoff game on the road. We all know the opposing coach, you know, that referred to the Phillies, that referred to the playoffs in front of Phillies fans at Citizens Bank Park as 4 hours of hell. It is. In previous seasons, the Phillies had started virtually every series on the road. In 2024, the Phillies' home road splits are substantial in virtually every aspect. Coming into the game on Monday, the Phillies' home winning percentage is .667. That went up after Monday night's win. On the road, .513. They have a team OPS of .762 at home versus .737 on the road. They've hit 105 home runs at home versus 84 on the road in the same number of games. They've scored 391 runs at home, .364 on the road. The pitching, far better at home. 3.47 ERA at Citizens Bank Park, 4.09 on the road. OPS allowed, .668 at home versus .728 on the road. And then 704 strikeouts versus .671 home versus road. They do everything better at Citizens Bank Park, which is why I still think you're going to see them make a big push to certainly move on past the wild card round. The wild card round is something that you don't want to be a part of, especially given how strong the wild card contenders are this year. The Padres, the Diamondbacks, and the Mets, I don't want to see any of those teams. Now, none of those teams want to see the Phillies either. But this is such a level playing field right now with all of the 6 teams that are going to be in the postseason dance. All of them can go to the World Series. There's not a single team that's going to make the postseason that can't win the World Series. So I want no part of a 3-game series against any of those teams, because I don't believe the narrative, and we were saying this last year, I don't believe the narrative that you have to play in the wild card round in order to keep yourself fresh. The Astros won the World Series in 2022 against the Phillies, and they didn't play in the wild card round. So that's a lot of shenanigans. You want to make sure you get to that divisional round. Don't play any more postseason games than you have to. Right? Get well, get rested, get your rotation started. I believe that this team, it doesn't matter if they've had multiple days off. It doesn't matter if they're rolling into the postseason having scored 50 runs in their last 5 games. They can go cold at the drop of the hat, and they can get hot immediately with no effort whatsoever. So I think you got to work hard over this last week to finish ahead of the Brewers. And then, yes, I want to see them continuing to play much of their starters. Now, maybe you back off the starting pitchers a little bit, get them out after 5 innings. You don't need to push them so that they're healthy for the postseason run. But you want to keep these guys on as normal a schedule as possible. And you do, if you play the Dodgers in the NLCS, you want games 1 and 2 and 6 and 7 at home, man. You want to play the Brewers at Citizens Bank Park more than you want to go to Miller Park. We saw that last week. The Brewers are tough there. So the Phillies, after the win on Monday night, are 0.5 game behind the Dodgers, and the Phillies have the tiebreaker, as we all know. So if they finish with the same record, the Phillies get home field advantage. They're now 3.5 up on the Brewers with 5 to play. And the Brewers are going to get started. The Brewers and Dodgers both had the night off on Monday. So the Phillies' magic number, I think, to clinch a bye is 2. Now they need a win and a Brewers loss, or 2 wins, in order to clinch the bye. The Yankees have the American League's best record at 92-64. That's a half a game behind the Phillies. And the Phillies would seem to have the advantage schedule-wise as you're looking through this. The Dodgers are still fighting for the division, so maybe there's a bit more to play for them. They might be a bit more motivated over the final week. Now, that could push them to push their starters harder over the last week, which could hurt them in October because they lead the Padres by just 2 games in the National League West. So the Phillies have the easier schedule by far. They host the Cubs for 2 more games on Tuesday and Wednesday. They have an off day on Thursday, and then they travel down to the nation's capital to take on the Nationals, who are 69-87 and not showing a whole lot of fight here at the end of the season. They just sent their shortstop, C.J. Abrams, you know, the young stud kid who has struggled in the second half. They sent him down to the minors. They demoted him to the minors partly because of his struggles playing, but also because ahead of a 1 o'clock game, over the weekend, he was out at the casinos until 8 a.m. that morning. So a little bit of growing up for C.J. Abrams, humiliated a little bit, getting it sent down to AAA, but a message being sent by the Nationals there. It's unclear if the Phillies will face him in Washington. But those are 2 series. The Phillies should win all 5 of these games this week. The Cubs are a dead team walking, and the Nats are by far a dead team walking. Meanwhile, the Dodgers are going to host the Padres for 3 games. The Padres at 90-66 are just 2 games off the Phillies' pace, or 2.5 games off the Phillies' pace. Not that that matters. The Phillies and Padres, you know, the Padres can't overtake the Phillies for anything, unless they pass the Dodgers and catch the Phillies for best record in the National League, but I doubt that. And then the Dodgers are in Colorado to play the Rockies. Now that, again, should be a very easy series for the Dodgers, but, you know, Colorado's a weird place, man. Sometimes those Rockies will sneak up and get you. And the Brewers have an easy series to start the week on Tuesday against the Pirates, but then they host the New York Mets. That could be a big series, depending on how things go against Atlanta, because the Mets are going to be fighting with the Padres and the Diamondbacks for wild card seeding if they end up knocking off the Braves. So both the Brewers and the Mets could have quite a bit to play for during that final week and final weekend of the season, while the Phillies are just kind of playing out the string against some lackluster opponents. The schedule certainly in the Phillies' favor. So the Phillies wrap up the National League East. And before I sign off here, we're going to do a roundtable podcast in the middle of the week with myself, Justin, and Liz. We may have a couple other friends join us to kind of help get us ready for the postseason. But I just want everybody, before we get into intrigue at the Palace, right, before we get into focusing solely on getting a parade down Broad Street, finishing the job, getting back to the World Series, our obsession with winning a World Series, like that's all going to take place once the postseason tournament begins. Like we are expecting that. The Phillies are demanding that of themselves, and once we get involved in October baseball, certainly we'll all be biting our fingernails, ripping our hair out, sweating bullets. Like it's all going to happen. It's the beautiful torture of playoff baseball, and we will immerse ourselves in it once again. But this is one of those moments, and for the next few days, that we can kind of take a look back on this summertime journey the 2024 Phillies have taken us on. And really, just as a whole, what this group, starting in 2022, has done. Maybe this National League East title doesn't feel as grandiose because this group has already won a pennant. Right, they did it as the third wild card in 2022, but they've already been to the World Series. They've already won a pennant. They didn't win the division to do it. So that's also one of the reasons why the celebration on Monday night was a little bit muted. There's still work to do, and this team knows there's work to do. On the field, it was all business. There was celebrating. For a lot of these guys, it's the first time they've ever been to the playoffs. For a guy like Estevez, who has been playing on the Angels, to be able to be on the mound for a clinching moment like that has to be a thrill, has to be a dream come true. He's going to be excited. There's going to be lots of guys who weren't necessarily part of this run in 2022 or 2023 that are excited. The young guys like Weston Wilson and Cal Stevenson, Cody Clemens, who's on the who are all on this team. Some of the young pitchers, you know, this is a first for them, and it's going to be exciting. We also so there's business to do, and we understand that. But this group over the last 3 years has brought this team along on a really fun journey. And maybe this doesn't feel quite as special because they won a pennant in 2022, because they were in the playoffs last year and had these unbelievable landmark moments in the postseason a year ago, ultimately ending in bitter disappointment, that we all hope they're going to do a make good on here in 2024. And really, that's what this postseason is all going to be all about, a make good for what happened last year, for a team that was supposed to win it all last year. They were on track. They were on the path to win it all last year until it all fell apart in two crushing games at home. We can get focused on that. We can get fixated on that, and we're going to. So for this moment, for the next day or two, let's just stop for a minute and appreciate this team winning the National League East, this team ending the Atlanta Braves' run of six straight division titles. And I remember going back to 2018, 2019, when the Braves were starting their run, when they got Acuna, and they got Max Fried, and Albies, and all these different stars, and signed them to long-term deals. We looked at that Braves team, and we looked at the Phillies, and we wondered to ourselves, how is this Phillies team ever going to knock off the Atlanta Braves? How are we ever going to compete with an Atlanta Braves roster as loaded as this? And over the last three seasons, the Braves won the division in 2022 and 23, but the Phillies knocked them out of the playoffs. The Phillies are the team that went further. And here in 2024, the Phillies end the Braves' six-year run of National League East titles. It is a monumental feat to finish in first place, even in a six-division format with five teams in your division, to over a 162-game season finish in first place. It is a major achievement. And it was a lot of fun along the way. You go back to late April, May, June, the All-Star Game, all the moments that I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. This has been a magical season. It really has been a magical season. All of the moments in September here, the Cal Stevenson game, Cody Clemens' big home runs, Weston Wilson coming through, Buddy Kennedy chanting, "Buddy, Buddy," over and over again. And you go back to last year, the Michael Lorenzen no-hitter with Weston Wilson hitting his first hit, a home run. You know what I mean? Like some of the Trey Turner ovation from last year. Like all of these different moments that this team has given us over the last 3 years. This is another one of them. Johan Rojas last year clinching the wild card berth with the walk-off single, right? Clinching a playoff spot with a walk-off hit. That had never been done in Phillies history before. And now here you have the Phillies beating the Cubs on Monday night 6-2, winning the National League East, putting themselves in a phenomenal position to make another run to the Fall Classic. So before we get into all of that, and we will, take a moment and just enjoy the Phillies winning this division title. Their first since 2011, 13 years between division titles. It's hard to do. It is really hard to win the division. And the Phillies here in 2024, thanks to their red-hot start, win the National League East comfortably by finishing ahead of the Mets and the Braves, outlasting both of those teams, and will head to the playoffs. We don't know the exact position yet, but seemingly in pretty good shape to make another deep playoff run in yet another Red October in Philadelphia. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I'll have an article out on Billy Penn on Tuesday for you to check out, so make sure you check out billypenn.com/hittin'season. That is our landing page with our outstanding content partners, billypenn.com, and of course, our good friends at WHYY as well. And of course, you can read my stuff over at The Good Fight. I'm also going to have some stuff at the SB Nation baseball site, main SB Nation baseball site. So you can follow me again on X at John Stolness, and you can find all of that stuff as well here over the next few days. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on the National League East Champions' favorite podcast, Hittin' Season.